This week on the Allegheny Front, stories from our series, Hidden Poison. It's a collaboration with some of our public media partners to examine the problem of lead by looking at what's happening in Pittsburgh.
The rule we have for our kids is that you're not allowed to drink from the bathroom sink or the bathtub.
This week, we're focusing on solutions. How do you keep children safe from pervasive lead contamination in water and paint? And here's something even many gardeners don't know. In cities like Pittsburgh, there's a lot of lead in soil.
You know, you could simply have wash your hands, wash your vegetables. And at the upper end, it's more keep your kids out of there.
I'm Kara Holsoppel. Join us on the Allegheny Front as we search for ways to keep ourselves, our families, and communities safe from lead. The Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority says its lead tests show 11% of customers in the city have lead levels above the Environmental Protection Agency's action level of 15 parts per billion. That's about 9,000 homes and businesses. 90.5 WESA's Liz Reed introduces us to two homeowners with high lead levels to find out what they're doing to make their drinking water safe.
Every day, multiple times a day, Jesse Perkins runs the water in his kitchen sink for about a minute and a half. He does it before he fills up a glass of water or a pot for cooking.
I even try to flush it before I fill my cat's dish.
Perkins bought his Lawrenceville home in 2013, gutted it, and spent 3 years fixing it up. As part of the renovations, he replaced all of the interior plumbing with plastic piping. The one bit of plumbing he didn't replace was the lead service line that carries his water 60 feet from the water main into his house. Perkins got his water tested for lead through PWSA, and it came back at 65 parts per billion, more than quadruple the Environmental Protection Agency's action limit.
I've been trying to run the water enough so that there's not supposed to be any lead particles in it, but the fact that it's coming through that lead line is still troublesome.
Let's suppose Perkins' service line is 3/4 of an inch in diameter. If it's 60 feet long, it holds about 1.5 gallons of water. Depending on the faucet and the aerator, anywhere between 0.5 gallon and 2 gallons of water can flow out of a tap every minute. So that minute and a half of flushing should be long enough to get rid of all the water that has been sitting in the lead service line and bring fresh water from the main for Perkins and his cat. But not every Pittsburgher trusts that method.
What's that look like?
Spider.
Yep, it takes a spider about an hour to spin a web. What does that look like?
Alligator.
Emily Drill and Steve Hayashi live in Squirrel Hill with their 3-year-old twins, Amy and Liam. They've actually had their water tested 3 times since last summer, with results ranging from 22 to 27 parts per billion, even with flushing. Drill says, as a parent, it was a scary realization.
It could have been a couple years, and, you know, I was just worried that we could have done damage to them and caused developmental problems without knowing it.
Hayashi says as soon as they got their lead test results in November, he went to Home Depot and bought a faucet mount Brita filter for about $25. It's certified to remove lead by NSF, an organization that tests water filters and other products for compliance with safety standards. And Hayashi and Drill instituted a new rule in the house.
The rule we have for our kids is that you're not allowed to drink from the bathroom sink or the bathtub.
Hayashi found out through PWSA that both his portion and the authority's portion of his service line are lead. Last week, he got a letter saying PWSA would be replacing their side of the line within 45 days and that he would have 4 weeks after that to replace his side while the ground is open. He attributes PWSA's attention to the matter to his own tendency to be a squeaky wheel.
I did my homework on the subject, and I'm concerned about my neighbors and friends who are blissfully unaware.
Hayashi says he's been getting quotes from plumbers and expects the project to come in around $4,000. Jesse Perkins says he also plans to replace his lead service line and that PWSA told him they'll do their portion of the line at the same time, but he doesn't know when he'll actually be able to get around to it.
I have other things that I need to spend money on right now, and I can't justify, you know, taking out a loan to do this. Maybe my answer would be different if I had a pregnant partner in the house or I had small children.
As for 3-year-old Amy and Liam, their parents took them to get their blood lead levels tested in January. Both came back perfectly normal, but they're still not allowed to drink the bathtub water.
Emily Drill, the mom in Liz's story, hit the nail on the head. The biggest, scariest part of the lead contamination issue in Pittsburgh and anywhere else is the impact it could be having on kids. No parent wants to find out that their child has elevated levels of lead in their blood. The heavy metal can damage the growing brain and cause developmental delays. So Liz Reed looked into what you can do if your child has lead poisoning.
Chris and Amanda Camo say when their daughter Eleanor turned 10 months old, she hit a lot of exciting milestones. She started moving around on her own a lot more, waving and gesturing and recognizing her grandparents on FaceTime. It's also when her personality started to emerge. As it turns out, Eleanor is a very calm kid, even when being poked with a needle by a phlebotomist at UPMC Children's Hospital.
Good job, Munchkin. You're doing so good. Yeah.
Boop, boop. You might be a little doctor.
She could be.
The whole thing.
Hello,
Mama.
Testing kids' blood for lead content is fairly standard around this age and is covered by Medicaid and most insurance plans, according to Allegheny County Health Department Director Karen Hacker. She says the department is considering mandating such testing for all kids between 9 and 12 months.
And that has to do with the fact that they're crawling around. This is a time when children are putting things in their mouths. And as you probably know, the primary source of lead is in the paint and the dust.
Hacker says 80% of homes in Allegheny County were built before 1978, when the federal government banned the use of lead in paint. Homes like Brandon and Aaron Blashcohen's 1924 Craftsman in Squirrel Hill South. They knew that their house likely had lead paint, but thought they were safe, having put a fresh coat of paint on every surface when they renovated the home in 2009. So when they found out last summer that their youngest daughter had lead poisoning, they were shocked.
My stomach immediately dropped and I panicked, and Brandon kind of talked me down a little bit. And I think I immediately took to the internet to see what more we could read about it.
Erin says the internet wasn't very helpful. She says they found all kinds of conflicting information about what they should do and what the impact might be on their daughter. Here's Brandon.
We really felt alone. We weren't sure how serious this was. We weren't sure, you know, does this mean that our daughter is going to have a lower IQ because of her exposure to lead.
A second test confirmed that their baby's blood lead level was 9 micrograms per liter. According to the Centers for Disease Control, anything above 5 micrograms per liter is cause for concern. Above 20 requires immediate medical attention and could necessitate chelation therapy, which uses a binding agent to remove lead from the bloodstream. Above 10 micrograms per liter, the health department will actually send an inspector out to the home to try to figure out where the lead might be coming from. Dave Namey manages the department's housing and community environment program.
We spend probably a couple hours at the house interviewing the family, taking readings of all the paint on the painted surfaces of the walls, the windows, sills, and we also do environmental sampling. We test the water, the dust, and the soil. We couple that with the child's behavior to try to determine how that child ingested the lead.
Hacker says often parents will want to completely get rid of all the lead paint in the house. But she says scraping away old lead paint can do more harm than good.
What you don't want to do is mobilize this stuff. Even in homes where the paint is very stable and it's not chipping and it's not dusting, and then they go and they renovate something, and during that process, they're mobilizing it as well.
Because the Blashcohen's daughter was just under that 10 micrograms per liter level, they weren't subject to a county inspection, which means they were on their own for the most part. The first thing they did was get their water tested for lead, but since it came back below the EPA action level, they had a feeling lead paint was the main issue. They hired a private inspector who explained to them that anywhere there is friction in the home, there's the possibility of disturbing old layers of lead paint lurking just below the surface.
Something like a cabinet opening and closing, drawers opening and closing, even if they had been repainted, that posed a significant concern.
But the Blashcohens suspect that the main culprit was the bouncy chair both of their daughters had loved playing in. They hung it from the frame of the doorway between their dining and family rooms.
That was one of the places that they told us, just rubbing against it, even in places that wouldn't otherwise have, you couldn't detect that paint had chipped even necessarily, could have created some kind of dust.
Aaron says they took down the bouncy chair and painted over the trim it had hung on. They also painted all the doors, doorways, and window frames.
But again, we have no idea, you know, this is 8 months later. We have no idea what caused it or if we did anything to prevent future issues.
Brandon says at a certain point, kids just stop putting things in their mouths, chewing on baseboards, and crawling around on the floor where lead dust settles. Once the risk factors in the home are dealt with, a child's lead level should decrease over time. The Blaschkoins had their daughter's blood tested again this month and found that the lead level had dropped to 3 micrograms per liter. Erin says they won't need to do any more blood tests, but her daughter's pediatrician will continue to monitor her development closely with her exposure history in mind. Having weathered this storm, the couple has some advice for parents just finding out their kid has high lead levels in their blood.
Be patient. Unless they're dangerously high lead levels, you know, take care of what you can take care of, but don't make yourself go crazy trying to figure out where she got it or how she got it.
The Blaschkoins say they're lucky. They had the resources to make the needed changes in their home, but they know not every family does. Last year, the county received $3.4 million in federal funding to do lead paint remediation in the homes of low-income families with small children, whether or not those kids have elevated lead levels in their blood. The Comos say they're certain they've got lead paint in their Stanton Heights home, which was built in 1949. Amanda Como gestures to a corner of the window jamb in their kitchen.
Places like that where you can see that it is, you know, totally peeling off, you can see that there's multiple layers. There's no reason why anybody would have ever taken the original paint off.
She says it's just an issue of keeping Eleanor away from it. And so far, their efforts are working. Her blood lead levels came back at 2 micrograms per liter, under the CDC action level. The health department's Karen Hacker says, though no level of lead is really 100% safe, if you're able to remediate the problems in your home and get your child's lead levels back down, they should be just fine in the long run. I'm Liz Reed, 90.5 WESA News.
Hidden Poison is our series examining Pittsburgh's lead problem. With public media partners 90.5 WESA News, Public Source, and Keystone Crossroads. There's more coming up. Stay tuned. An environmental group says Pennsylvania is too easy on fracking companies that break the rules.
They're basically getting away with a 10-cent parking ticket for serious violations of regulations meant to protect our health and our environment.
Penn Environment's new report points out only 17% of violations of environmental or human health regulations result in a fine for fracking companies. For more on that story and the latest environmental news, head to our website, AlleghenyFront.org. So, as we heard earlier, lead paint was finally banned for home use in 1978, but it's still a hazard. To find out more about what can be done, I spoke with Janine Zappa, Executive Director of Conservation Consultants, Inc. It's a nonprofit that works with homeowners on energy efficiency and recently added lead paint testing to their services. Give me an idea of how big a problem lead paint is.
So lead paint is still the leading cause of lead poisoning for people in this country. It's not just confined to urban areas, although you may see a higher concentration of it there simply because of the density of housing. But really, lead paint is tied to the age of the building. And in homes that were built before 1940, about 87% of them have a statistical likelihood of having some lead paint present in that home. As the homes get younger, so to speak, the risk goes down, but it doesn't rule it out.
So who should have their home tested for lead?
Our suggestions are in line with those of the EPA, which has this great handout on their website that's, you know, should my home be tested? It's a one-pager. And really the key things are if there's a child under the age of 6 in your home, you really want to give serious consideration because those are a population that is at great health risk should there be exposure to lead. If you're planning to do some renovations to your home, because it will create dust when you're sawing or sanding. You know, if you're hiring a contractor and your house is older and you're going to disturb that paint, you know, don't use a heat gun. It will exacerbate the issue of lead paint exposure. Even drilling a hole in your wall to put a painting or hang something on your wall can create enough lead paint dust that you're creating a hazard. You'll be ingesting it, particularly if you have your food or your drink exposed. You've got your cup of coffee there, and the next thing you're doing is sanding. That's really not a great idea at all.
So how does the lead test work? What's the process, and what kind of tools do you use?
In your home, you really want to be looking for any area where there is chipped paint or evidence of paint dust that is built up by that paint just deteriorating over time. What we do when we go in to test is we will collect samples if there is actually flaked paint. And we can also take water and soil samples, and all three have to be sent to an accredited lab for chemical analysis for testing. But we'll also take typically dust swipes, and you want to have at least 3 or 4 samples to evaluate so that your results are valid. And you typically want to take samples from a couple of different areas as well, right? I might be taking from the windowsill. I might be taking from down along the baseboard, wherever that dust might be likely to accumulate, and particularly where a toddler is likely to play and put their fingers in their mouth. The other thing that we do in the house is we use a specialized piece of equipment commonly called an XRF device. XRF stands for X-ray Fluorescence Analyzer. And it's just a specialized piece of diagnostic equipment that uses a low-level radioactive isotope in the equipment to actually measure the information that comes back on the chemical array from the paint composition to determine if there is lead in it. And we can get an answer right then and there on the spot and tell the homeowner, but we also provide a comprehensive report afterward, as does anybody who does this kind of testing.
If there are layers of paint, it kind of looks at all of the layers?
It does. It actually goes down to the base layer and all the layers that have been added on top of that.
Once you get the lead test back and you have reached the threshold where there needs to be action taken, what happens next?
If you have kids, you really want to get them retested. They were probably tested in their early pediatric visits, but you want to have that blood lead level testing done for you and your family members. And then depending upon the degree of, let's say, the problem, because we're finding the problem may not exist in every single room. So you want to tackle the areas where you have the highest lead, and your ability to do so is something you may be able to take care of yourselves. There's some really great guidelines, again, offered by EPA about how to protect yourself and the residents of your household. Pretty simple steps that you can take. You know, you don't always have to get rid of all the lead paint. What you have to do is contain it.
How do you do that?
So, and with the caveat that we are not lead paint remediators, you want to remove first children from the home before you do this. That is the number one caveat that I would offer, is you don't want to be doing any kind of lead paint cleanup or remediation while you have children under 6 in particular. But really, I would just offer the guidance, if you have kids, get them out of the house. You want to be wearing a significant filtering mask for yourself, probably some protective garments, just the disposable zip-on suits that you can buy at any local hardware, and gloves. And then you want to use a HEPA vacuum and vacuum up any of the paint chips and dust. So get rid of any of the visible dust, bag it, and securely dispose of it. Don't just dump it into a bin. You want to use wet sanding where you can. So you want to wipe it up, contain it, much like somebody who has allergens may be used to using a wet dusting method. It's pretty similar. So once you've removed, you know, the visible stuff that's in the area, then you want to paint over it, right? You know, if the surface is prepared enough that you can do that, you can simply paint over it, and that will contain that lead paint exposure. Because what you don't want is it to continue to degrade and chip and flake and turn into dust. Now, if your problem is so significant that you're down to bare wood, you're really going to need a more professional grade remediation, and you should find a qualified contractor who's going to use lead safe practices.
CCI just started offering this lead testing. Why and why now?
So lead has really been a problem for a long time, but the only silver lining, and I will emphasize only, in the national lead water crisis is that people are paying attention again to lead in their homes. Lead exposure from whether it's soil or water or paint are really important home health considerations. So that's really one big reason. And the other is that increasingly in what we do, in what we like to talk about as whole home performance, so how your house works together as a system, we are finding increasingly across the country, there's really an intersection of home health with home energy. And you really can't tighten up a house without thinking about lead exposure or radon, which is also, as you know, a pretty important issue. We're sitting on top of a radon hotspot in our portion of the country. and mold. And we also have a lot of moisture issues. And we serve lower income households primarily in the work that we do. And we're in about 3,000 to 3,500 homes each year. And roughly 30% of the homes in which we do a whole house energy audit, we find have a moisture issue of some sort in the basement. That can precipitate a whole bunch of other kinds of issues, including, by the way, causing paint to peel and pop off. And many times that is, unfortunately, lead-based paint. So we feel there's a responsibility for us in what we're doing to really think about the consequences of the entire cycle of how those pieces work together in a house.
Janine Zappa is executive director of Conservation Consultants, Inc., a nonprofit offering home lead testing. We should say that CCI's lead testing initiative is funded in part by the Heinz Endowments, and so is the Allegheny Front. There's more on lead paint remediation at hiddenpoison.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple. We've heard a lot about lead contamination in drinking water from old infrastructure and mismanagement on the part of water providers. And of course, lead paint. But there's another pathway for lead that's all around us, well, under us. It's soil. Recently, on a chilly Saturday afternoon in March, I joined some people huddled under tents at a community garden center in Pittsburgh's Larimer neighborhood. They were taking advantage of a free lead test for soil. Shay Moore lives on the north side, and she brought two sandwich bags of dirt.
We have an area in the front where we grow a lot of herbs and some other tomatoes, and then we have our main garden is in the back.
Digging up and growing food in soil can expose gardeners of all ages to lead, but kids under six are most at risk. They're likely to put dirt near or in their mouths. Lead can cause irreversible damage to kids' developing nervous systems, even before they're born.
My wife is, 7 months pregnant now? So we're more concerned than we were for us.
Moore waits while Jonathan Burgess of the Allegheny County Conservation District performs the lead screenings. One at a time, he places the bags of soil in front of what looks like a gun from Star Trek. The XRF machine shoots an X-ray beam at the sample for about 30 seconds.
And then it's shooting another X-ray beam at a different intensity at it, and it's sort of measuring the energy that's coming off of all the different soil particles.
So in about a minute, he gets the result. Shay Moore is happy with the number from her backyard.
105 parts per million, which he said was a pretty healthy level, and we can, you know, plant stuff like leafy greens and all the stuff we want to plant.
Leafy greens like kale can actually take up lead from the soil through their roots, and it contaminates the leaves we eat. Unlike, say, beans or tomatoes, where lead isn't passed on to their fruits. The EPA says a lead level under 150 parts per million is relatively safe. At 400 parts per million of lead or higher, Burgess recommends bringing in lead-free soil and gardening in raised beds. He's seen a wide range of results today.
Nothing that screams, you know, off the charts dangerous. It tends to be, you know, kind of middle levels, like between, say, 200 and 1,000. And across that range, you know, you could simply have wash your hands, wash your vegetables. And at the upper end, it's more keep your kids out of there.
Back at his office, Burgess tells me Pittsburgh is like a lot of industrial cities when it comes to lead.
It's just historical. You know, it's cars in the driveways and paint on the houses.
In 1978, lead-based paint was banned for homes, but old flakes and chips end up in soil. Until the 90s, gasoline had lead in it to help engines run smoother. So anywhere near where cars or trucks were driven or idled is polluted with lead. And we actually made lead here.
A lot of people would be surprised to know we used to have lead smelters all over the city in residential areas.
And all of that lead is still there. It accumulates in the soil and stays put in that same 6 or so inches of soil under the grass where most gardeners are digging. Burgess says testing soil from different sections of a yard, from multiple garden beds, or where there used to be an old shed, can help gardeners decide the best spots to plant food.
Just a few feet, you can go from, you know, very high levels to very low levels and back again.
Other ways to minimize risk? Feed the soil with compost and cover bare ground in gardens or anywhere else. Dan Brabander works on these issues as a professor at Wellesley College in Massachusetts.
You need to put down wood chips or other barriers so that the rows that are not planted do not present themselves as bare soil that can be readily resuspended.
Resuspended in the air. Dust is another way lead from soil makes it into our bodies and blood, and it's a big problem. Dr. Marilyn Howarth is an environmental toxicologist at the University of Pennsylvania. She's looked at elevated blood lead levels in kids in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
We have seen children where the lead paint has been remediated from the inside of their homes, and they still have had elevated lead levels, and the only contribution that we've been able to find has been the soil.
One study found that in cities all over the country, blood lead levels in kids vary by season.
The old idea was that that was because kids play outside a lot more in the summer.
That's Gabriel Filippelli at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. His research shows that the problem isn't necessarily that kids are playing in the dirt. It's that dust. Filippelli found when soil dries out by late summer, dust gets kicked up. It can find its way into the house. We even track it in with dusty shoes. And it winds up on nearly every horizontal surface kids come in contact with. Filippelli thinks looking at the big picture, neighborhood-wide, could be even more effective for public health than going house by house.
I would argue that recognizing the soil-based exposure source and dealing with it is probably going to end up positively impacting more kids for less cost per kid.
Jonathan Burgess at Allegheny County Conservation District is working with community gardens, nonprofits, and researchers to get a better handle on where soil lead contamination exists in the Pittsburgh area, beyond just backyards and into larger spaces like blighted properties.
The question that we're trying to answer is what we can do with land that isn't slated for development, that is going to continue to be sitting there in communities and could be put to better use and could be remediated over time.
Remediation could be as simple as, say, planting sunflowers on vacant lots to soak up the lead. This effort to collect data through sampling is happening alongside work to revitalize parts of Pittsburgh that are struggling. Ruckwee Bay is a member of Black Urban Gardeners and Farmers Cooperative of Pittsburgh.
We can walk through here a little bit. So you see this flag? This is one area that goes up to that flag. So we take from three samples from this square.
Her group worked with Jonathan Burgess recently to collect soil samples from this and another empty lot in Homewood.
There are 27,000 blighted lots in Pittsburgh. And Homewood has more than any other neighborhood.
This is an area that could really benefit from an urban farm. Right now, there aren't any supermarkets to buy inexpensive fruits and vegetables. Bay plans to use this vacant lot to grow them.
This is a solution for us to take our community into our own hands. Yeah.
The soil lead tests came back favorable. So plans to break ground on covered hoop houses and raised beds for vegetables can move forward this summer. All of the stories in our Hidden Poison series are at hiddenpoison.org. Hidden Poison is a series examining Pittsburgh's lead problem, reported by us, the Allegheny Front, and our public media partners, 90.5 WESA News, Public Source, and Keystone Crossroads. Thanks for listening to this week's show. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of the Allegheny Front. I'm Kara Holsapple.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds, PNC Charitable Trusts, and the Benedum Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of energy and conservation.